Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. And as usual, I would like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku rules that an application filed by 14 members of the MDC renewal team challenging their expulsion from parliament should be heard on an urgent basis.
The Zimbabwe Republic Police says it is concerned that children continue to be raped and abused in the country by elders in the country.
We have noted that most families tend to try and sweep the issue under the carpet, but what only happens in such cases is that they only protect the perpetrator and actually give him or her more room to actually abuse more children.
And Nigeria's former military ruler, Muhammadu Buhari, has won the country's presidential elections, beating incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan by over 4 million votes.
The Constitutional Court says an application filed by 14 members of the MDC renewal team challenging their expulsion from parliament should be heard on an urgent basis. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku today ruled that the application filed by MDC Renewal Team Secretary General Tendai Biti and 20 others challenging their expulsion should be heard urgently because President Robert Mugabe has already proclaimed the date of by-elections in constituencies that were represented by the applicants in the August House. In a notice published in the Government Gazette on Friday, President Mugabe announced that the nomination court will sit on 16 April, while by-elections in the affected constituencies would be held on June 10. In view of this, the Chief Justice said the application to set aside Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda's ruling expelling Biti and his colleagues should be heard on the 14th of April before the nomination court sits 2 days later. Lawyers representing Mudenda also consented that the matter was urgent. The expulsion of the MDC renewal team members from parliament followed a request by the Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC formation, which argued that Biti and his colleagues were no longer representing the interests of their party. This followed in-house squabbles last year that resulted in Biti leading a group of MDCT officials in breaking away from the main opposition party. Subsequently, Biti and his team suspended Tsvangirai and the opposition's national chairperson, Love Momoyo, but the Tsvangirai camp regrouped and instead expelled Biti from the party. In papers filed in the courts, Biti and others contend that there is a leadership dispute in the MDCT, and this was a matter that should have been dealt with by the courts and not by the Speaker of Parliament. Meanwhile, the application filed by former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration and Headlands legislator Didmus Mutasa and former Urungwe West parliamentarian Themba Mliskwa challenging their expulsion from parliament is set to be heard tomorrow. Mudenda expelled Mutasa and Mliskwa from parliament following a written request by the new ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Ignatius Chombo. Both Mutasa and Mliskwa have since been expelled from ZANU-PF for allegedly bringing the name of the party into disrepute. However, Mutasa insists that no one in ZANU-PF has the right to expel him as he does not recognize the new leadership following the ruling party's congress held last December. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, ZANU-PF Secretary for the Commissariat, Xavier Kasukwere, was in Bulawayo yesterday, where he urged party members to field their best candidates for primary elections Sunday next week to enhance ZANU-PF's chances of winning in a city where the MDCT overwhelmingly won all parliamentary and council seats in the last elections.
The vacant constituencies are Pelanda, Bampopoma, Luveve, Makokova, Pumula and Lopengula, which fell vacant following the expulsion of MDCT legislators who left the party to form the MDC Renewal. Former candidate for the Pelanda Bampopoma parliamentary seat, Joseph Chuma, who's also a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, tells reporter Standikile Mhlanga his party is confident of winning the by-elections, even if the MDCT participates.
So everyone is now getting to realize that, no, we've naturally been coerced to jump into a wrong train here. So now people are willing to jump off that train and jump on to the moving train of ZANU-PF, which is a train of empowering our own black people, a train of self-discovery, a train of sustainability, and a train of sovereignty. So from that perspective, I think that a lot of the electorate in Bulawayo is definitely going to turn out there are huge numbers to now say, let us put ZANU-PF back to where it belongs.
So if your hope of winning the elections does not necessarily rely on MDC boycotting the same elections, what exactly are you offering the electorate now that they will turn to ZANU-PF?
There's an adage that says that Rome was not built in one day, but Rome can be destroyed in one day, you see? So even with our economy and the Zuma said the issue, it's not something that is going to happen overnight. People must say, not expect miracles. We are explaining it properly now to the people. Zuma said it's not about government alone. It's not about ZANU-PF alone. It's about every citizen of Zimbabwe getting involved. Let's now roll up our sleeves and all get dirty by working. And when we work, we will then produce.
And that was Joseph Chuma, former parliamentary candidate for Pelanda Bampopoma and ZANU-PF Central Committee member, on the line with Studio 7 Standikile Mhlanga from Bulawayo.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says it will press ahead with its plans to go onto the streets April 11 to protest plummeting standards of living as companies continue to close. The workers are also up against statements by the government to freeze salary increments this year, among other issues. The ZCTU today said it will not be deterred by what it called state propaganda targeting the union ahead of the protests. War veterans have also been threatening the union over the protest. ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo tells Studio 7 that state media allegations of a tug of war between the union and the opposition MDC are nonsensical and meant to create a fallacy that the opposition is part of the demonstration.
The preparations are going on smoothly. We are not worried about the onslaught from the Herald. We have gone through this in the previous period. That's what the Herald always does. They misrepresent, they misinform people. We are not worried about that, but we proceed with what we have planned. So the preparations are going very well.
If the police cleared you for you to say you are going to continue with the demonstrations?
Generally, we don't have to get clearance. We merely notify the police so that they can assist on the road to give us an escort. We received what is purporting to be a rejection from Bulawayo, citing that they don't have manpower, and also citing that they have the information that people who are opposed to government are going to join us. We are likely to ignore this and proceed with our procession as usual, because we have been doing this over the years and they have never been violent.
That was ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo in Harare.
Nigeria's former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari has won the country's presidential elections, beating incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan by over 4 million votes. President Jonathan has just called General Buhari to congratulate him on winning the presidential elections. With only one state left, Buhari is leading by nearly 4 million votes and has secured the constitutional requirement of winning at least 25% in at least 24 states. The remaining state, Sokoto, is projected to be won by Buhari. The 72-year-old retired general was Nigeria's military ruler for 20 months after officers staged a coup in December 1983. Earlier, we reached out to former Studio 7 and VOA reporter Jinedu Ofor, who's now a politician in Nigeria, for the latest.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is your old friend, Jinedu Ofor. I hope you remember me. I'm now in Nigeria. I'm a politician, a good politician.
So how is it going, Jinedu? We understand that, you know, Nigerians have voted and they've spoken. What is happening on the ground right now?
I think there's going to be a historic change, a historic shift in power. As we speak right now, final figures are being put together, and everything indicates that current President Goodluck Ebele Jonathan will lose this election, and Nigeria will have a new president-elect, former military head of state, General Buhari.
Yeah, why do you think Mr. Jonathan is losing this election?
Several factors. I think the country is yearning for a change. The PDP, the party of the president, has been in power for about 12 years, and there's a perceived indifference to the plight of the people. There's a perceived arrogance of power, and things are not getting better. Few coups are back in the country. The naira has been devalued. Life is getting more difficult for people, and corruption is also increasing. So everybody believes that Buhari, with his background as a very, very stern disciplinarian, can bring some measure of respect to Nigeria, measure of decency in government, and improve at least in the short run the lives of the people and restore confidence in the country's economy.
Achinedu, we understand you also, like you are saying, you are now a politician and you are going to run in state elections at the weekend. Good luck to you. But I wanted to ask, how did you find it easy or difficult in terms of, you know, going back from the U.S. to your country and to penetrate to become a politician? How easy or difficult was it?
It was the most difficult decision I've ever had to take in my life. I left for a known, quiet, comfortable life to an unknown life, yes. I was born in Nigeria, but I've left Nigeria ever since I was a kid. And all kinds of stories about how bad Nigeria really was. So I guess it's, you can call it a leap of faith. I took a leap of faith. I wanted to go back, see what I can contribute. But I was just tired of complaining. So when I returned, it was I was almost a total stranger to my people, to my culture, to the country. It was very difficult reintegrating myself. But I've never been a quitter.
And that there is Chinedu Ofor, a former Studio 7 reporter, now an opposition official in Nigeria. And he spoke with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Nigeria.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a deadline looms for companies to pay government taxes.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The White House today released President Obama's proposal to cut U.S. greenhouse gas emissions over the next decade. The proposal includes several policies already in effect, such as the higher fuel economy standards for cars and trucks, energy efficiency measures for buildings and appliances, and programs to eliminate the use of the polluting refrigerant HFC.
A new public opinion survey in the United States shows that Americans broadly support efforts to negotiate an agreement to restrict Iran's nuclear program, even though they are skeptical that it will actually prevent Tehran from building an atomic weapon.
And Malaysian authorities have arrested 5 employees of a private news website and placed them under investigation for sedition in what is seen as the government's latest attempt at stifling dissent and free speech.
To Today is the deadline for companies to submit their tax amnesty forms to the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, or ZIMRA, but not much had money trickled into state coffers by the end of the day. Industry is warning that forcing non-performing companies to pay taxes in arrears amounting to over $1 billion is disastrous and will lead to massive company closures. ZIMRA had set the dates for businesses to apply for tax amnesty from October 1, 2014 to 31st March 2015. The period of payment is from October 1, 2014 to 31st December 2015. Government's revenue target for 2015 is US $3.951 billion, of which US $3.76 billion is supposed to come from tax. To discuss the ZIMRA deadline, Studio 7's Blessing Zulu talked to Chief Economist of Resource Exploitation Watch, Washington Mehlo Makulu, and Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe President John Mufukari. Mufukari says companies are operating well below capacity and forcing tax compliance is counterproductive.
It is definitely a double-edged sword in the sense that while we understand that ZIMRA has to get money for government, which is facing fairly serious shortfalls in its revenue budget, the vigor with which ZIMRA is going about its work is causing the closure of many companies. And as a result, although ZIMRA will collect a significant amount of money now, this is definitely not sustainable, and in the long run, the country as a whole is going to be the loser.
Mr. Mehlo Makulu, your take?
Well, I agree with Mr. Mfugari. It's really a double-edged sword in the sense that obviously government through ZIMRA needs the revenues in order to fund their government programs. But the unfortunate impact of such an exercise is in terms of sustainability and viability of companies. What we are seeing is obviously the dwindling of the economic cake because ZIMRA's ability to collect or quantum of collection is determined by the amount of economic activity that is taking place in the country. But as the economy falls, as we have seen in the last few months, it therefore means that revenue collection also goes down. And to make up for the shortfall, ZIMRA is obviously using strong arm tactics to try to make up the difference. But what we therefore urge ZIMRA to do is obviously to try to encourage companies to pay. Instead of enforcement, they need to go for compliance, where companies go, voluntarily come forward and pay their taxes. And those that are paying their taxes, ZIMRA must forego the issue of penalties, because if you are given a 100% penalty, it means that your tax liability goes up by 100%.
Now, Mr. Mufukari, ZIMRA is arguing that it actually gave a reprieve to some of these companies, but the majority did not come forward and try to settle matters with ZIMRA.
Yes, that is quite true. But I think before wielding, rolling out the big guns, ZIMRA should really have sat down to say, why have companies apparently not come out to take advantage of a good thing? And they would have found out that in most cases, it's really inability to comply. And with people like this, you don't go out there and then start closing them down, because when you close them down, it's a clear thing that you are the loser in the long run. What many members of MCOS would have wanted was a situation where ZIMRA understands that if companies can pay what they owe ZIMRA now, that is about the best that most of them can do. Then the arrears that they have with ZIMRA is negotiated so that it's not paid now. It is paid as and when the situation allows. You can also understand where ZIMRA is coming from. They need that money and they need it now. But unfortunately, in the long run, nobody is going to emerge. This is a total lose-lose situation.
Mr. Mahlomakulu, can there be a win-win situation?
Yes, there can be a win-win situation, and as Ms. Mfukari has rightly pointed out, Zimbra obviously needs to lengthen the period of settlement in terms of outstanding arrears, and allow companies to pay their current obligation. And we have said this and continue to say this, that the payment of outstanding obligations should therefore be extended for at least 3 years, because that allows the economy to recover, and you hope that period enterprises are able to restructure.
That was Chief Economist of Resource Exploitation Watch, Washington Meshwamakulu. You also heard the views of President John Mfukari of the Employers' Confederation of Zimbabwe. The two spoke with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Republic Police says it is concerned by the issue of sexual abuse or rape of children under 18 in the country. The police say provinces including Mashonaland and West have recorded many cases of abuse since the start of the year. According to police, in February, 260 reports of abuse were reported compared to 269 last year. In 2014, there were over 3,000 reported cases of sexual abuse or rape of children. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Tolakele Ndlovu, a child rights and protection advisor with Plan International Zimbabwe. Ndlovu says parents, healthcare workers and the police should work together in protecting children and also assisting abuse and rape victims.
The first point of call is actually the health services. Why? Because of the 72-hour deadline. We want every child who has experienced sexual abuse to access the post-exposure prophylaxis within the 72 hours, which actually helps to prevent maybe infection with HIV and AIDS and also the other STIs. And also for girls who have actually experienced maybe their menses to prevent pregnancy. Then from there, if a child is below the age of 18, this protocol actually stipulates that it's mandatory to report sexual abuse to the police.
There's also the misconception that usually sexual abusers are unknown to the children, and many times they're not related or close hands to the children.
Actually, from the statistics that we have seen, that a majority are people unknown to the person, to the child. We include neighbors, we include extended family members, and in some cases, immediate family members like brothers, fathers. We have noted that most families tend to try and sweep the issue under the carpet. They try to sit their family court to try and address the issue. But what only happens in such cases is that they only protect the perpetrator.
Tolakele Ndlovu is a child rights and protection advisor with Plan International Zimbabwe. And remember, in live talk tonight, we are going to be discussing the issue of rape of minors.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In advance of International Women's Day on March 8th of this year, China arrested several women's rights activists campaigning against sexual harassment. While some activists have since been released, 5 well-known female leaders remain in detention. They include Wu Rongrong, Wei Tingting, Wang Man, Zheng Chuan, and Li Tingting, also known as Mai Zeye. The women had planned to organize protests in several Chinese cities March 8th to highlight the problem of sexual harassment. The 5 activists were charged by police March 12th with creating a disturbance, picking quarrels, and provoking troubles. This sweeping charge is often used by Chinese authorities to silence and detain government critics. A guilty verdict can carry a sentence of up to 5 years in prison. If China is committed to advancing the rights of women, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, then it should be working to address the issues raised by these women's rights activists, not silencing them. The United States calls on China to release immediately the detained activists and partner with them to help ensure that men and women everywhere are able to live free from harassment and violence. 20 years ago, then First Lady Hillary Clinton famously told a gathering of world leaders in Beijing that human rights are women's rights, and women's rights are human rights. But in this case, said Ambassador Power, what Hillary Clinton said next is even more apt. Let us not forget that among those rights is the right to speak freely and the right to be heard. The continued detention of the Chinese activists, said Ambassador Power, reminds us that women's rights cannot advance when other basic human rights are denied. Moreover, men and women alike will suffer when the worthy desire of individuals to address pressing social problems is stifled under the false banner of creating a disturbance.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In our sports segment today, Zimbabwe Sevens rugby chairman Ronald Mangenge says he is proud of his team's performance at the just-ended Hong Kong Sevens rugby tournament. This is despite the team's failure to make the cut and join the 15 core nations that make up the Sevens rugby tournament. The team arrived back in the country today and will immediately start preparing for Olympic qualifiers, Mangenge told Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye.
Zimbabwe just returned from the core circuit qualifiers in Hong Kong, where they played Russia in the final, but unfortunately they lost in dramatic fashion, which is heartbreaking for all Zimbabweans that were watching, because they went out there and they knocked out teams that have got bigger resources than them. So yeah, for us, they did very well and we're proud of them.
At this tournament, you were trying to become a core member. What benefits comes with being a core member in Sevens Rugby?
Being a core team, it basically means that we join the world's best rugby-playing nations in terms of sevens. Instead of us only playing the one tournament that we play in South Africa, which is part of the IRB circuit, we get to play on each and every leg of the sevens circuit, which basically means we get to play in 9 different cities across the world. So this is what we were aiming at, to be a core member of the sevens circuit.
What is the way forward now?
The way forward is to keep going. We will keep training. The next thing again is again to prepare for the Olympic qualification. Now sevens rugby is an Olympic sport, and we are still in the qualification process after doing well last year. So we are preparing for that.
That was Chairman of Zimbabwe Sevens Rugby, Donald Mangenge, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye from Harare.
It's that time of the day, Jonga, where we dish out news from you, the listeners. You send us the text, and here they are.
The first one says, "Hello, everyone there. My name is Colin. I listen to your station every day."
And this one says, "Hi, Studio 7. How are you all? Thanks very much for professional journalism. Please greet for me my loving wife, Jessina Tokomere, sons, Henry Charles Jr., Munyaradzi, Marshall, and McBride."
And the other one says, "Thank you guys for the news that you dish out to us every day. You might think we don't appreciate, but deep down in our hearts, we really thank you and wish you all the best. George Dube in South Africa."
This one says, "Hi, I'm a great follower. Thanks for giving us the best news."
And the other one says, "I'll be very happy if you read my text. I would like to say hi to my father and mother in Mashingo, Chivi. My name is B. Tafirei in Gokwe."
And this one is a bit long, and it says, "Hi, Studio 7 guys. Thanks for unbiased and professional journalism. God must bless you all. Could you please greet for me my family, all the Nyandoros, the Wachis, the Nguruves, and the Chinizas scattered around Zimbabwe? I love you all. Ocean of thanks to my lovely wife, Amai Munya. I say I will always love you. McBride, grow well, my son. Dad loves you. Baba Cheniza Pretoria." That's him who wrote from Gauteng, South Africa.
And this one says, "I like Studio 7. You give us true and balanced news forward ever."
And the last one is from Cheniza, who is in Pretoria, who says, "Please, anyone who unlawfully abducted this innocent young national asset must safely return him alive in the hands of his family." I think he's talking of Itai Dzamara. That's the end of the emails, Jonga. Let's look at what we had tonight.
Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku rules that an application filed by 14 members of the MDC renewal team challenging their expulsion from parliament should be heard on an urgent basis.
The Zimbabwe Republic Police says it is concerned that children continue to be raped and abused in the country by elders.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Do please stand by for me and Standing Ilemhlanga.